In 2014, some things about the book business are as long gone as the days of Mad Men. Three martini lunches, of course, as well as an urban landscape dotted with bookstores. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. Also among the missing, or so we thought, were the hefty advances that signal the imminent arrival of a big new book or the opening of an important career. Well, for at least one New York Times reporter, happy days are here again. And to learn more, we turn, as we always do on Friday, to Andrew Albany, senior writer of Publishers Weekly, here in the offices of PW. Andrew, welcome back to Beyond the Book.
Greetings, Chris, and welcome to PW.
Well, and it's nice to be here in New York and to chat with you face-to-face again. So for all the talk about how challenged publishing is, we did see some evidence this week of what has to be an encouraging trend for some authors, at least, or for one author in particular, another seven-figure advance. Are million-dollar deals back?
Yeah, they're back, big time, with the bullet. Well, okay, probably not. But the news this week has to be fairly encouraging for writers. Specifically, I'm speaking of St. Martin's Press, which this week acquired a debut novel by 36-year-old New York Times reporter Stephanie Clifford for a reported seven-figure deal. And this comes right after some really hefty deals, million-dollar deals, that happened around the Frankfurt Book Fair, including two debut novels and one debut nonfiction work. Clifford's book was bought by Charlie Spicer at St. Martin's. It's set for a 2016 publication, and Spicer has described the book as Edith Wharton meets the Bonfire of the Vanities for the 21st century, which I'm not exactly sure what to make of, but I'm sure it's a great book. But for now, I think the larger point is that we are actually seeing some pretty high advances, at least on the high end, after a few years without such big payouts. And what makes this all the more interesting to me is that these deals come as the industry is consolidating. I mean, we're now the big five, not the big six anymore, which means we have fewer imprints competing with each other. And what's doubly interesting to me is that these advances are not going to celebrity authors, which often usually command the big million-dollar advances, but they're actually going to literary works. And at least three of these cases, they've gone to debut authors. Now, I have to wonder if the large advances at the top are coming at the expense of the writers in the middle. And I say that because advances are declining. That we know. No question about it for mid-list and for lower-list authors. And you know, just because we're seeing bigger payouts at the top, these million-dollar advances again, it doesn't mean that the average advance is rising. And the other question I have is how ebooks are factoring into this trend. You know, as we've discussed on the show many times before, ebooks are actually proving to be pretty profitable for publishers, and I do wonder if the efficiencies of ebook distribution, especially the ability to make money on the backlist, is beginning to embolden some publishers to spend more money on new works. Still, it's true these advances are very much a risk. You know, earlier this year we spoke about debut author Matthew Thomas, whose book We Are Not Ourselves was bought by Simon & Schuster in 2013 for a seven-figure deal. Now, that book was very well reviewed, but it's only barely edged onto the bestseller list here at PW, and it slipped right off after a couple of weeks. And I think that underscores that how tricky it is to sell good fiction, especially in a market with so much competition for readers' attention. Nevertheless, we are seeing the publishing industry paying millions of dollars to writers rather than to lawyers, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, in fact, it's probably something to applaud, but I'm still mulling over Edith Wharton meets the Bonfire of the Vanities for the 21st century. I hope Charlie is thinking of the House of Mirth and not Ethan Frome, because that could really not go well for them. But, you know, when it comes to advances and money for authors, that's always good news. And we learned this week that former New York Times editor Jill Abramson is pairing with Steve Brill, a name everybody will be familiar with from his many years in online and print journalism, on a new venture that will publish 12 nonfiction short books. And they say they'll pay $100,000 for each work. But this venture turns on something that's interesting and more points to the future than the old days of big advances, and that's subscription.
Yeah, that's right. So we first heard about this venture a week or so ago. And, you know, what we know is that the venture will involve contributing writers who are going to be paid on average, so they say, about $100,000 per piece. And these pieces are supposed to be longer than a magazine story, but shorter than a book. So I don't know exactly what you'd call them. I think Kindle Singles has kind of broken the mold for that. And what we learned also is you mentioned that this is going to operate on a subscription basis. Now, $100,000 is pretty good money. I know it's far more than most book advances are these days. But at this point, I really have more questions than anything else. Certainly not a lot of answers right now. Are these going to be multimedia, for example? Are they going to be ad-supported too? I'm just not sure how this is all going to work. Steve Brill came out and said this week that it's going to be largely based on subscription revenue. That's going to be the main component. But it's probably going to feature, you know, an array of different ways to capture revenue. And we also know that it's going to go across a wide array of subjects. You know, some $100,000 works, for example, a book on healthcare might do better than a book on, you know, copyright, as much as, you know, we love copyright here. So it's hard to say how I have a lot of questions about how this is all going to work. But let's also take this as a positive sign. You know, it's always good to have new players and new models, and I look forward to seeing how it's all going to play out.
Well, so would I. And, you know, subscriptions have promised to be a hot topic for a long time now, and it's interesting to see them finally make their move. And this week, we also saw a couple of pieces on the subject in the media. Our friend and a frequent guest on Beyond the Book, James McQuivey, the Forrester analyst, posited as that Amazon is the king of subscriptions. And there was also a piece on the rise of Oyster, that upstart service for ebook subscriptions. So, really, are things getting serious?
Absolutely. And I, you know, in the coming weeks, we're going to have another story on this in PW. So you can check this space and check the PW website for more on the growth of subscriptions. But a few things to this. And the first is that at Frankfurt this year, I had a chance to interview HarperCollins CEO Brian Murray. And he only had good things to say about his experience with Oyster. And also there's Scribd, which is in this space. And I think it's clear, at least from Murray's comments, that subscription is generating not only a lot of churn in the backlist and decent revenue, he said, but it's also generating some very useful data for them. And I think that's going to be something we're going to see more of in the future. But you mentioned those pieces this week. And what was really interesting to me was McQuivey's take, which was in an article for Ad Age. And in that article, he said that when it comes to subscription relationships, nobody beats Amazon. And of course, that's our cue. You know, we get to talk about Amazon a little bit. Now, luckily, it's been a quiet week on the Hachette front, so I can go a little further afield in my Amazon fix this week. But what really strikes me about the rise of subscription is that for all the battles we've had over ebooks, from the Google lawsuit to Apple and the price fixing case, the publishing industry has remained fairly stable. You know, ebooks have done well, and the bottom hasn't dropped out like it did for the music industry, so much so that they're paying million-dollar advances again, right? But it's hard not to look at Oyster and Scribd and the new Brill-Abramson partnership, as well as Amazon and, of course, Apple, which acquired a subscription service called Booklamp earlier this year. It's hard not to look at all of these and not think that the book business, or at least the ebook business, is going to look completely different in the coming years. And why not? You know, it's amazing how much of my content I get from digital subscriptions, whether it's Netflix or HBO or Spotify. And as I read more and more on my phone and on my tablet, I wouldn't expect books to be any different than any other kind of content that's out there right now being sold via subscription. So my Amazon observation here is really this. For all the hand-wringing in the industry right now, publishers and authors, I think, have a chance to move into a robust new space for digital reading. And that space is not dominated by Amazon, at least not yet. So how do we seize on this moment in our digital history to ensure the widest number of competitors and platforms available out there? And I don't have an answer beyond saying I hope more publishers will follow HarperCollins' lead and experiment boldly in this space, because I think that's the best way to make sure we don't wind up with a dominant player like Amazon in the subscription space. And that is something I hope we'll get a chance to discuss more at the Miami Book Fair at our panel on November 23rd.
Well, indeed, and some terrific news there. In addition to the already announced panelists, we have Astra Taylor, a musician and author, yourself, Andrew Albanese, joining us, and as we had last year as well, Orrin Teacher from the ABA, but Franklin Foer, and I hope I'm saying his name properly, who recently wrote a well-read and somewhat controversial cover story for The New Republic on Amazon and why Amazon must be stopped. So we're looking forward to having Franklin Foer join us as well. And as always, very happy to see you here in New York City. Andrew Albanese of the Offices of Publishers Weekly, thanks for joining us on Beyond the Book.
Thanks for coming by, Chris.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.